You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Otto Bolden was there. Watch DK Metcalf, the Seattle Seahawks wide receiver, and ran a 10-3. Otto, kind enough to join us. What did you expect from DK Metcalf, Otto?
It changed over time. When I saw the play initially, I think I irked a lot of football fans by saying, oh, okay, big deal. 10-4 guy runs down 10-6 guy, and America goes crazy, fastest guy on the planet. And then I started listening to people who I thought knew more than me, like Renato Nehemiah, for example. And, you know, he was a football player, and he obviously had a world record in the hurdles. And he said, oh, you know, DK is going to get destroyed. And I was like, why am I giving DK too much credit? So by the time we went on the air, I said, well, I don't know, 10-6, 10-7. If you had told me this guy was going to run 10-3, I'd have said, no way. But he did. And I think he, you know, even though he crosses the line in last, he was the winner yesterday.
Well, also, I'm looking at his form out of the blocks. Like, this is what you did for a living for a long time, and you analyzed this for a living. So if you're looking at his form, what could you correct, and what do you think is actually possible for DK Metcalf?
I didn't see a lot wrong with his form. I said when I analyzed the start in real time, I said, if you looked at this video, you wouldn't be able to tell, oh, yeah, there's the NFL wide receiver. He looked like a sprinter for most of the race. One of the things that I said before the gun went off is my concern is that weight that he carries to be an NFL wide receiver and to have an NFL body is going to show up at some point during the race. Well, it probably showed up at about 80, and when everybody started to decelerate, as all sprinters do towards the end of the race, he was decelerating a lot more than everybody else. He probably could have hung on for maybe 6th or 7th, but no, his form, I wouldn't change a lot, other than he didn't relax probably as well as a sprinter knows to relax because they know the fatigue is going to come. But no, form-wise, he was fine.
I remember Carl Lewis telling me this a couple of years ago. He said he knew that it was, I think, 44 steps. Is that strides? Yeah. Does that sound right?
Yeah, for Carl, he'd probably take 44, maybe even fewer, yeah.
Okay. And what did Usain Bolt take?
Usain was 42 and a half.
And what did you use? How many strides?
I was 45, 46 on a bad day.
What was your single best time?
9.86, ran it 4 times.
What is that feeling like?
You know what? Before I ran sub 10, I had a teammate who had run, John Drummond, who had run 9.9. He was like, yeah, you know, it's like you step into this whole dimension and you come on the other side and you're like, oh my gosh, you've run under 10 seconds. Now, mind you, when I ran under 10, I was like the 8th or 9th guy to do it. The first time I ran under 10 seconds, which, oh, by the way, was at the Mount Sac relays where DK ran yesterday, it felt like 10.05 or 10.10. And he said, oh, you ran 9.93. And I went, oh, that's it? Oh, great. So it doesn't feel any different to, you know, to any other good performance. You know you've run fast, but there's no, like, you know, there's no sound barrier to go through.
I got you as one of the top 15 people who have walked this earth who have run this fast. That's pretty cool.
I think I'm in the top 50. I mean, you know, look, you know how you can't compare eras. It's like trying to compare, you know, guys who used to shoot the three well to what, you know, what we see now in the NBA. I think I'm up there still, but I think my skill was being able to run both the 100 and the 200 pretty well.
Paulie, what do you have, Otto? What's his time?
I got 9.86, but there's only, I got 13 humans have ever run 9.86 or lower.
Oh, wow. So, Dan, you're right. I'm still in the top 15.
Yeah.
Maybe you should take my job at NBC, because I certainly should have known that. I didn't think I was in the top 15. I thought maybe top 20.
If DK Metcalf called you and said, give me some advice, and do you think I could actually do this and make the Olympic team in 4 years?
Oh, I think he'd have a shot. The first thing is that he'd have to be closer to 200 pounds than 235. And you notice when Lewis Johnson asked him yesterday, so, you know, are you going to train more? Like, he's like, yo, I got minicamp. Like, he knows who cuts the checks in his life. But, yes, if he called me and said in 4 years, I think he'd have a legitimate shot because I think obviously he's a freak of an athlete because to carry that weight for that far and run 10:36 having trained for, 4 or 5 months, I think is so amazing. He'd have to lose a lot of weight and he'd have to really train hard. But he has the chops, no question.
Would you rather be Usain Bolt or Tom Brady have their careers?
Oh, wow. I mean, obviously, my track and field bias is going to show. You know what? They're both pretty equal because both of them have one thing in common. I don't think anybody is going to doubt that they are the greatest of all time in their sport and certainly in sports, period. So, yeah, probably Bolt.
But I think with Bolt, somebody eventually comes along and will be faster than him. I don't know when, but somebody will. It's going to be really hard for somebody to come along and win 7 Super Bowls. So I would rather be Tom Brady. But I will say, if Usain Bolt was at a cocktail party and so was Tom Brady, I'm probably more curious about Usain Bolt and some of the things that I could ask him.
Well, I would counter that, Dan, by saying that it is, you know, everybody, sprinting is not math. So you see guys running like 9.8 or 9.7. You go, well, that's not too far off. The record's 9.58. I am saying to you that the gap between what they're running now and 9.58 and 19.19, which are both world records, and the gap between whoever has, I don't know, 4 or 3 Super Bowl rings and Brady is about the same. So don't think that the Bolt's world records are going anywhere anytime soon. It's going to be a long time before somebody gets there, trust me.
Is there trash talking in sprinting?
There used to be in my era. This is the kumbaya generation. They don't actually like each other, but they pretend they do because it's the politically correct era. I have to say, you know, about, you know, getting back to DK, I looked yesterday and all weekend for any sign of, like, superiority. Like, he didn't walk into this track meet like, yeah, I'm the big Pro Bowl wide receiver and you guys are mere sprinters. This guy was humble. He you know, he tried to assimilate. He didn't even leave after his heat. He stayed and watched the entire meet. And I went, my God, I'm a 49er fan since I was born. It's against my religion to like a Seahawk, but I'm gonna follow this guy because I think he's a fantastic kid.
Are you a Niners fan?
I am a Niners fan. Grew up watching Montana to Rice and Clark and everybody. Yes, Ronnie Lott, the whole deal.
Did you try to play football?
You know what? When I moved here at 14, my high school, Jamaica High School, which produced some guy named Bob Beeman, did not have a football team. So I think at the time when I should have, like, maybe been pulled in that direction, I didn't have anywhere to go. And I stayed in soccer and then eventually went to track.
If we ran the 100 meter today, what would you run?
Yeah. Probably like 11.1, 10.0, 11.0, yeah.
So we're about even.
Oh, yeah. We're so even.
It's great to catch up with you again, Otto. We appreciate your time. Thank you. Hope you have a great summer.
Absolutely. You too, guys. Always good to be on with you.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We started the show. We talked a little bit about what's going on with the Kentucky Derby winner, Medina Spirit, accused of using an anti-inflammatory. Bob Baffert is the great trainer for that horse and won a couple of Triple Crowns, won the Kentucky Derby 7 times. And Bob joins us now. Bob, thanks for joining us. What have you been accused of exactly?
I've been accused of my horse tested positive for a legal therapeutic medication. It's called betamethasone. And it was 21 picograms, which is, we call it contaminant levels. it's a picogram. They're testing at these really low levels the last few years, and so it's been a problem in racing. But the really troubling thing is, Dan, is that the horse has never been treated with that specific drug. So we're at a loss for words trying to figure out how he got contaminated, because at those levels, they call it contamination.
Okay. Once you find out what has happened, do you do, you know, inventory with your staff where anybody could have possibly administered this to this horse without your knowledge?
Well, usually it's that specific drug is usually it can be injectable, but the horse wasn't injected with that. So we're going through different. We check, make sure that nobody had any special creams. You know, I'm learning about it right now, but nobody handled the horse had any creams or anything like that. So we just don't know where this came from.
Do you think you've been sabotaged?
I don't know if I was sabotaged indirectly. I think it could have been somebody handled this horse, touched it, because at those levels, it's very minute. It's at a level that it wouldn't affect the horse. And it's scary. They're scary levels because I've had this this problem before.
When did you find out that this inquiry was going on?
I was on my way to California on, Saturday. And I got a call from my assistant trainer, Jimmy Barnes in Louisville. And he told me something horrible has just happened. And I thought one of the horses had gotten hurt. And he says, we've just been served with that. Our horse, Derby horse, tested positive for betamethasone. And I immediately, you know, called the stewards there and want to know what's going on. Something's not right. It's got to be. And I told them they need to test. Get hair samples immediately. Let's get some DNA. This has to be a mistake. And it still could be. I'm hoping it's a mistake. Maybe it was a wrong horse or whatever. But, you know, it's something that I've got an investigation team working on it. But it's horrible, Dan. It's something that I would never risk my reputation. And I trained for, you know, these great horses and I train for great clients, and it just doesn't make sense. And but it's hard to, you know, people in the horse industry, they understand, you know, it's BS, but not the public.
How beneficial would this drug be to that horse?
At that level, it had zero effect on the horse. We're talking picograms. It's like one picogram is a salt grain. It's a billionth of a gram.
Are you going to run the horse in the Preakness?
Well, we're planning on it. We're waiting to hear from Preakness came out with a statement. Churchill Down came out with a really harsh statement. I was shocked by it because, you know, I think it was just a knee-jerk cancel culture kind of reaction. And they violated my due process. I mean, this usually when you get a positive ban, it's supposed to be confidential. And they wait for your split to come back, and usually takes a few weeks, and then they announce it. But it leaked out immediately. I've had this happen to me a couple of times. They just leaks out immediately. So I now I have to fight this in the public.
When do you get the second result back?
They usually come. It usually takes about 3 weeks for it to come back.
3 weeks.
Yeah, it's a very slow process.
But will the Preakness allow you if they don't, you don't have that second test back?
Well, they should allow me because the horse is not officially, it has to be confirmed if there was a mistake. So basically, they really can't, you know, they shouldn't, you know, keep him from running.
Can you sue to run in the Preakness?
I think there's some, we're looking at some avenues that, you know, if they do come up and say something, you know, we're going to be aggressive here.
But if you talk to the casual sport fan here, Bob, who doesn't know horse racing, they probably say, well, you've got some priors here that you've had other incidents with horses. So what do you say to the casual sports fan looking at or even people in the horse racing industry here, that there have been other horses who have failed drug tests?
Well, I think a lot of them were just you know, mistakes. Like, this is from 1971, you know, down the road, I used to be a little sloppy, and there were overages. They weren't nothing really serious. And the last couple of years, I've had some, like Justify was the big one. He ingested scopolamine, which it comes in the hay. I couldn't prevent that. And we resolved that. It was a bad headline. I had a groom that urinated after he had COVID, and after he's getting over, he urinated in the stall and the horse ate it. It was a cough medicine. We resolved that. You know, things like that happen because they're testing at these really extremely low levels. This would not have been positive in California. That's the thing with racing. It's not uniform, and they just change these rules here in Kentucky because of that, because of those levels, things can happen. Then in Arkansas, I had a lidocaine positive last year and one of my in the Arkansas Derby and another horse. And then we found out that we just resolved that because there was other horses that tested positive in the Arkansas Derby that were right below the threshold. So they got contaminated within 45 minutes of the race. So these things happen because, but when they're testing at this new level, they just started this because everybody's like, you know, racing has been in this, we've got to clean up the sport, and they've got this new Horse Racing Integrity Act. And I was one of the guys, first trainers behind it. So I think it's good. We need somebody in there. I welcome like a Travis Tiger to come in and see this and to explain to the people. If we had them, then the people say, well, you know, if they're looking at it, we need people like from the outside looking in, because the regulators that we have right now, they just don't use common sense. You know, it's getting really bad.
Where's the horse right now?
The horse is actually in a van headed to Preakness, to Pimlico. We usually fly him there, but the cargo company just lost their lead, so they had a van there. So this is the first time I've ever van there. I think it takes about 10 hours.
Is there sabotage, though, in the industry? Like you're saying you could be. Like, are there people out there that are trying to taint these drug tests?
I'm starting to. I've never been a conspiracy theorist, but I'm starting to suspect it's been happening to me on the big day, you know. And so, and we have the security. We're watching them. I mean, these horses live. They don't live in a bubble, you know. Their environment. There's stalls. It's open. You know, it's people can walk through, and you know, anytime. We don't really, you know, we're not thinking. But it just seems really strange now that here's a horse that didn't get that specific drug. He was not treated with that. And that's mind boggling right there, that somebody either had it contaminating him somewhere. So we just don't know that. I hate to speculate, but I we don't know.
What do you think happens today? What are you working on today?
Today we're working on Maryland, on like the Preakness. We're trying to figure out, they're going to have the draw. They're supposed to, I guess, notify me. I haven't been told anything, you know. I just know what we read. So I'm just waiting to hear my, I have my lawyers, you know, watching it closely, what's going on. And so that's all we do is sit and wait.
If officials are watching right now, from the Derby or Preakness, what would you say to them?
I would say, you know, I didn't administer that. The horse didn't get my, I'm an open book. I'm a Hall of Fame trainer. I've had a lot of success, and a lot of people are out there, you know, just, they don't like it. You know, that's part of the part of the game. I understand it, but I didn't do it. And they need to look at this in a different way. It shouldn't have been called a positive. And they know it's a contaminant level. And we've been dealing with this. And I keep saying, you know, racing has a lot of problems, but Bob Baffert isn't one of them. But, you know, with success comes a lot of jealousy and animosity. And but I'm an open book. I'm very transparent. They look at all the vet records. We present everything to them. We're an open book.
Bob, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the challenge there. We'll certainly be watching. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Dan.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reggie Miller, the Hall of Famer. Turner Sports is not going to know what game Reggie's going to have until later today. So we'll just have to sit here and wait with Reggie to find out where he's going to be coming up here. How was the weekend?
Happy belated Mother's Day to you and yours and all my Danettes and everyone, our viewers watching or listening abroad and at home.
Yeah.
Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, well, because you got the newborn there, so
that little... made it even extra. It made it just that bit extra special to celebrate Mother's Day. I'm very lucky.
All right, I got a couple of questions here. Let me start with Steph. Something that you are well versed in. These shots' degree of difficulty here, Reg. Like, it's hard to say that I'm surprised or amazed when I tune in to see Steph. I would have thought I've seen everything. How do you describe this run that he's had here in the last month or so?
I'm surprised and amazed. That's what I'm going to say. And this is coming from a guy who I felt that I've seen everything.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. The degree of difficulty and time and score when he's making some of these shots, it's sometimes head scratching. And, you know, for a guy who put a lot of time and effort into my craft, hours and hours into gyms, shooting different shots from different locations, you know, being off balance, having contact shooting shots, I know how difficult it can be. He has made it look like it's like he's shooting a free throw. And that's what makes people like myself somewhat amazed, because I know how difficult it is. So I am amazed. And people ask me about MVPs. He won't win the MVP, but in my opinion, he should be in the top. He should be in the top three for what he has done and what Golden State has done. No one really has, especially when Clay went down, everyone thought this was a straight line to the lottery once again. Give Steve Kerr and staff credit, and I give Draymond Green and especially Steph Curry a lot of credit for hanging in there, playing with a young team. You lose your second-round draft pick, James Wiseman, a month and a half ago, and you have still found a way to be competitive, and you're in the playoff hunt. It's amazing what he is doing.
And if you get in that play-in game with the Lakers, like, that's really flirting with danger if you're the Lakers.
It is.
You know,
especially against a player like Steph.
Yes.
Who can get hot, and it doesn't matter if he's at home or on the road. His ability to make.
Okay, but the Lakers take down the Suns. I don't know how important that game is. I don't know how big it was to you. But just, you know, we keep thinking that the Lakers and Nets just go into the playoffs and then everything's going to be fine. You've had, I'm guessing, an injured ankle before. Like, those don't ever, it doesn't feel like they go away. And all it takes is you roll the ankle again, or, you know, Anthony Davis gets injured again, and then you're out for three or four games. And that's how you get knocked off here.
You want rhythm and chemistry at this time of year, especially going into the playoffs. And let's face it, injuries are a part of the game. We get it. And I look at Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They got right. They got healthy at the right time towards the end of the season when everyone was getting banged up. Tom Brady and his gang of Warriors got right, got healthy, and started to click and play at the right time and onto the Super Bowl, and they win it. And it's not a light switch. Basketball is not a light switch you can turn on and turn off. You have great talent. Don't get me wrong. Nets, Lakers, when whole, when healthy, my opinion, they're the two favorites. But you've got to have some type of rhythm, and you've got to have some type of chemistry going into the playoffs. I think it was a huge win for the Lakers for their psyche.
Yeah.
Because everyone's talking about play-in, and I still think once LeBron comes back, they will be better, but it's not a light switch. And like you said, you are messing with danger because of the way Steph, if they end up playing Golden State in that playing game, remember, I mean, that one loss, that can prove a lot of things. And Steph can get hot and put up 50 on you in a heartbeat. So you've got to be careful, and you've got to try to find a way to get that rhythm and chemistry going.
We were talking about Russell Westbrook, that he's on the verge of breaking Oscar's record for triple-doubles in a career. I was wondering how Magic Johnson would be in today's NBA.
Oh, my God.
But he'd be shooting more threes, though, right, Reg? He'd be shooting that set shot three?
He probably would be, but think about that. At 6'9", a 6'9 point guard. When there's no hand checking and freedom of movement, yeah. That's the two things taken from the 80s and 90s basketball versus the 2000s. Freedom of movement, being able to, you know, not hand check, and you can float anywhere you want. Magic Johnson playing downhill every time there's a missed shot. I think he would have been brilliant.
Yeah, because he had a couple of years. I think he mostly averaged like 24 one year when Kareem was gone. But he was like a 19 points, 11 assist guy. And that's where we get caught up in stats and people say, you know, Russell Westbrook is maybe the second or third greatest point guard of all time. I want to know what my point guard does when I need him to do, you know, what it is a point guard's supposed to do. John Stockton, you know, what did he average? 15, 14?
15 or 16.
Yeah, like, but what did he do when he needed to do it? That's what Russell hasn't given us. Westbrook is a, you know, statistical anomaly. It's just when he's been on a big stage, he hasn't performed. That's where I always say that's the difference in being a great point guard and one of the all-time great point guards. Russ is fascinating to watch. But can you do this on a big stage? And maybe the pressure's off because Washington is not a great team or high expectations, but him and Bradley Beal in a short series, they could be, I mean, they could probably, you know, steal a series from somebody.
Hard out with those two guys.
Yeah.
Because both guys, they can win you ball games, and it's always going to be a dogfight and a struggle. And look, you know, people always want to knock Russell because of the triple doubles, you know, and it's almost, what have you done for me lately? We know that you're putting up these numbers, but you're in the ninth or 10th spot in the East. But I say that to these people. I would much rather want to have a guy who's ready to run through a brick wall like Russell Westbrook, who gives you effort on every single play. Does he have flaws? Absolutely. But playing hard is the number one thing that you don't see a lot of great players do. A lot of great players have talent, but they don't play hard all the time.
And it's true,
Russ
though.
Plays,
he does.
Russ plays too hard. Sometimes he plays too hard, right?
I know.
He plays too hard.
I know.
Slow down.
I know.
I would much rather have Russell Westbrook than a lot of these other guys that take plays off.
He's Reggie Miller, the Hall of Famer, Turner Sports NBA analyst. The Pelicans' David Griffin got fined $50,000 talking about how Zion is officiated. And I gave a couple of stats here on him that nobody has had their shot blocked more than Zion. 131 times he's had a shot blocked this year. But nobody scores more in the paint. Like he's 300 points, I think, more than the Joker and the Greek Freak. So he gets in. Like he's a smaller version of Shaq. I don't think they know how to officiate him here, Reg. But Zion, to his credit, did say, I hope I get to the point where I get those calls. He didn't criticize the official. Now he's got a broken finger here. How do you officiate him? And is it similar to the way Shaq was officiated?
Somewhat similar. I think with Shaq was so much bigger than everyone else and so much more powerful. It almost wasn't fair. And I think what David Griffin and the Pelicans, and to Zion's credit, what they're doing is just planting a seed for years to come. Because until he develops that outside jump shot, and you and I, we've talked about this on this show many of times, if they can't solve what he's doing in the paint, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think all he wants to do is plant seeds in the official until he gets a jump shot, because that's the only way really he's scoring is in the paint. And that's driving. And the reason why he gets his shot blocked the most is because that's where his bread and butter is. That's where his candy land is in the paint. So of course he's going to get his shot blocked more because he's not taking jump shots. He's shooting in the paint.
And I wonder, what would you tell him to work on?
I would have him, number one, a face up from 15 to 18 feet, a catch, and a couple jab steps to freeze the defense and to knock down that shot, or a one dribble left or a one dribble right pull up jump shot. Because then you're going to have the defense guessing. Because after that, we've seen his first step. His first step is unbelievable. We've seen his spin move after his first step. He likes to go left, spin, and then bring up, you know, the arms up. That's probably where he got a broken finger because he exposes the ball. What I would do, one dribble, pull up left. One dribble, pull up right. Now you keep the defense guessing. Now you can work on your spin move, and you have the defense at your mercy.
We also talked about Luka Doncic, that he got tossed, you know, in the game against Cleveland for the flagrant. But the technicals are a really big concern for me because star players can't be baited. They shouldn't be baited. And here's Luka with 15 technicals. Dwight Howard's the only player with more. He's got 16. So what advice would you give Luka Doncic on trying to avoid getting involved in these and complaining?
Well, here's the thing, because I was a complainer, and I...
That's why I'm asking you.
A small complainer. You never want to put your team in jeopardy, because they didn't have, when you got a certain amount of technicals when I played, you got suspended a game. That would hurt the Mavericks. That would hurt your team. So you can't put yourself in that position. You know, look, having played for Rick Carlisle, Rick Carlisle goes to bat for his players. And I would go to, if I'm Carlisle, I would go to Luka and say, look, let me handle the officials. Let me get tossed. Let me get on them. Because what he's doing now, over time, could eventually hurt his team. Because every play, it seems like when he doesn't get the call, number one, he's in the backcourt having conversations with the official while the play is going on. And he's doing his team a disservice by not getting back into place.
Because you have players who are irritants. You know, that's their Patrick.
That's their job.
Yes. But Luka can't let Rasheed Wallace, you played against Rasheed. It felt like anything bothered Rasheed. Draymond Green is baitable, it feels like. And great players, you have to use it as motivation. And it doesn't feel like Luka does that.
And the type of game he has, think about this. Luka has the basketball for the Mavs, I would say 85, 90% of the time. Your game can do your speaking for you. If you think a player is baiting you or trash talking you or whatever, you've got the ball in your hands. You're calling all the plays. Take it out on them and their team. You can't get caught up in words. Take it out with your play. Embarrass them. That's how you get your payback.
What was it? Last Friday was the anniversary of your game against the Knicks.
Eight points in 9 seconds. Yes, it was. Like it was yesterday.
Did the Hall of Fame ask for anything from that game?
I believe they asked for either a jersey or my shoes, which they have. I gave it to them. Yes.
Where are the socks?
I don't know.
In a laundry bin? See, I would like the socks. That would be great. How many items does the Hall of Fame have of yours?
Shoes, a full jersey. They probably have a game basketball, wristband, and that's it.
But those are all based off of what? So the one game at the Knicks?
Certain games performances, like that game, the Jordan hitting the shot over Jordan. I'm sure they asked for something. Look, it's an honor when they call and say, hey, you know, we're thinking about displaying this at the Hall of Fame. So of course the Pacers sent it off, which was cool. I think those two games are the two things where they've asked for stuff.
But you see Greg Anthony, right?
All the time.
Yes, you see Greg Anthony, and Greg is the guy who was trying to guard you, and you kind of nudged him, and he fell to the floor.
I'm glad you said it. The correct word was nudge.
Yeah, you nudge.
Incidental contact.
But do you... Can you bring this up, or would Greg Anthony ever bring this up to you that you'd...
It's funny, you know, I've called a couple games with Greg, and we'll see something during the course of a game, and he'll bring it up like it's 1995. Like, I shoved him out of a moving car or something. I'm like, Greg, you were on your way down anyways, my friend. So my incidental contact shouldn't have really even mattered a little bit, but I just like, you know, when I went like that right away, I thought I was going to get the call, but when I didn't hear a whistle, and Anthony Mason, I'm telling you, God rest his soul, he threw me the best pass Mark Jackson never could have thrown me. I mean, it hit me right here in my pocket, right in my shooting pocket, right into my, I mean, one dribble behind the three, it was launched.
Anthony Mason was scary.
That Knicks team was scary. I mean, people want to talk about the Bad Boys, and rightfully so. Some of those characters on the Bad Boys were a little loose. Charles Oakley, Anthony Mason, I mean, Greg Anthony, John Starks, a lot of these guys had screws loose too. Thank God I had my Davis boys who weren't all there. LaSalle Thompson wasn't all there. Sam Mitchell, not all there. So we could kind of like go toe-to-toe with the Knicks. But Anthony Mason was a scary dude, man.
Who is the guy that you worried about after a game that you played against?
Two. And I love them to death. Vernon Maxwell, who's one of my good friends.
Mad Max.
Because you didn't know if he was going to come into the locker room and ask for an autograph, or if y'all were going to be scrapping in the middle of the visiting team's locker room. And Alvin Robinson. Ooh. I mean, Alvin, I knew after my rookie year when John Long came to me and said, never, and I mean absolutely never, Reg, say a word to Alvin Robinson. Just let him play his game. If he fouls you hard, just say, good. Don't even look at him because his eyes are steely black. Don't even talk to him. So you didn't know what you were going to get between Alvin and Mad Max.
Well, you
love them both. Love them both now.
Mark Jackson tells that story about Alvin Robertson. They're playing dice. And he said they know he's cheating, and everybody's afraid to call him on it because they were worried that Alvin was just not a guy you messed with. I love that. They had to continue to lose money because they couldn't call Alvin on cheating.
No.
He had loaded dice.
Crazy. Just crazy.
Oh, God. And you survived.
I survived. I'm here speaking with you and my Danettes.
Yeah. All right. Well, so you don't find out your assignment until later today?
I think it's either Portland at Miami.
Ooh.
Or it's Portland and the Phoenix Suns.
But so you're not traveling yet.
I'll be on.
You're not traveling. Not traveling yet, right?
Not traveling yet. Remotely.
Oh, well, then it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's still remotely, people.
I just saw where Duncan Robinson is in line for $20 million a year contract.
Really?
Yeah.
No, that's good. That's good.
Imagine if you're 20 years younger, Reg.
I will never fault guys for making money. That's what this game is all about. The guys before me, they paved the way so I could make a living. And that's what we did now for the Duncan Robinsons of the year. $20
million. Yeah, pretty good.
For a shooter, go get it.
Thank you, Reg.
Thank you, Theodore. I love you. Damn it!
Talk to you soon. That's the Hall of Famer, Reggie Aloysius Miller, Jr. III.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.